You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
And a very warm welcome back to Solidarity Breakfast.
A left response to the major developments in capitalism.
What they trade in is not wheat. They trade in famine.
A little dose of revolutionary optimism.
I think it's really important to sort of express solidarity globally.
It really is a deal by corporations for corporations.
The union forever defending our rights. Down with the black leg.
If you think the ABC's left wing, don't listen to this program.
Solidarity Breakfast, 7:30 to 9 a.m. Saturdays, 3CR, 8:55 a.m. Streaming and 3CR digital, podcast or audio on demand. And of course, the website, solidaritybreakfast.org.au.
Solidarity forever!
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie, and that's Tobiah.
And Anila, I'm back in the studio.
Full house.
Yeah.
Lots
another
of things.
Saturday.
Yeah, lots of things going
full
on this
week.
Yeah. Apparently the anarchists are taking over the city and we should all be worried. And yeah. I was thinking the whole concept about anarchy, this idea that of throwing bombs at heads of state have survived the meme machine.
And I mean, all for blocking a bridge. That's it.
Yeah. That's
in solidarity with the comrades in Sydney.
Yeah, I know.
We'll have a Supreme Court ruling or something against them, whether or not they can occupy a bridge.
And in fact, it's quite interesting to think about the things that require a death penalty, you know, like selling single cigarettes at Staten Island.
Yeah.
Like Eric Garner, he got a death sentence for doing that.
Oh,
you know, there's lots of things. The little kids in Northern Territory who are being targeted because they're what? As you said, Anila? Because other people are racist?
Yeah. And some children are considered more important than other children. I think it's a really interesting kind of trend, this kind of doubling down on kind of carceral, really authoritarian approaches to criminalising people. Something we've got coming up on the show is going to be talking about Northern Territory approaches to criminalising children's behaviour. And one of the things people have been really outraged by is mandatory sentencing for stealing. So
that's
children
I mean.
Under the age of
stealing.
14 getting in trouble for stealing. So to your point, Annie, I think these people are crazy.
And the use of the recent passing of the law to reinstate spit hoods on kids.
Oh, my God. It's
which
just
is
torture.
Absolutely insane.
Well, it also tends to take you to the fact that there are people sitting in comfy buildings and offices making rules like this. But what about the people on the ground who are actually doing and partaking in the actions that are using these tools? Anybody who's looked after a child knows that once you've hit them, you've shot your gun. That's it. It's over.
And I find it very hard to believe that they would be comfortable with their own children being treated like this if their children did the wrong thing.
Well, the thing about it is, as they say, if it's not just that you're creating violent behaviours, you're actually, you're not just creating, getting people to be killed, you're actually making killers. And this is a vicious, vicious cycle. We've got headlines.
We do. I mean, Anila, you want to kick us off?
I think for me, the thing I've been watching this week was the recent kind of slew of recognitions of Palestinian statehood. So at the top of the week, we had France moving to recognise a Palestinian state, and they were soon followed by announcements of conditional recognition by the UK and Canadian governments, who've outlined that their recognition will be dependent on the actions of the Israeli government and the Palestinian Authority. So they're set to join in September 145 countries who have already recognised Palestinian statehood. So worth pointing out, it's actually currently a minority of largely Western governments that haven't recognised Palestinian statehood.
And I mean, this comes from Keir Starmer, just to say the UK government, someone that said that during his term he wanted to reduce the percentage of femicides and domestic abuses, like there would be an acceptable number of femicides, and that just we need to get to that and then everyone would be happy. But
yeah, but all these names and words, and they're all in their suits and they're all gathering together and they're going to you know, say that Palestine is a state and people are dying, you know, they're literally dying. The Australian Palestine Advocacy Network, APAN, is concerned by Australia's decision to sign on to a joint statement with 14 other foreign ministers purporting to advance recognition of Palestine and a two-state solution while failing to condemn or challenge Israel's genocide in Gaza, its apartheid policies and illegal occupation of Palestine. This statement is a clear example of a colonial thinking that sustains the genocide that Israel and its allies is perpetrating. Palestinian rights are not dependent on the behaviour or approval of their colonial oppressors, but additionally, what is needed is recognition of Palestinian self-determination, not a merely mouthed assertion that it is for Israel to control Palestine's future, they say.
And that's in reference to the conditionality of the UK in particular's statement of recognition. That's going to be, well, essentially Keir Starmer's government is using Palestinian statehood as a stick to try and corral the behaviour of the Israeli government, reminding them or threatening them really that if they don't get their behaviour in line, the UK will recognise Palestine. And I think to your point about kind of colonial logics, the idea that Palestinian statehood, which is a right internationally kind of owed to them, is being, I guess, weaponised to further the UK's domestic approach to foreign policy, I think it's just a classic example of colonial governments having very little interest in the human rights of the, especially in the case of the UK, massive historical and colonial influence in Palestine, completely disregarding the human rights of the people that they have directly contributed to oppressing for the sake of furthering their own political goals.
Well, interestingly enough, there was a fantastic piece on Instagram with a person meticulously destroying an oil painting of Balfour that's hanging up in one of the universities, I think it is. Anyway, they just tore it up in bits, and it was quite fascinating because that exactly to your point. The Palestinian statehood should never be used as a bargaining chip or threatened punishment, says APAN. APAN is angered that this statement treats Israel not as a perpetrator of mass atrocities and the world's first live-streamed genocide, or as a state whose political class and media have repeatedly and explicitly dehumanized and called for the eradication of the Palestinians, but as a partner in peace, even as it deliberately starves people, bombs hospitals, refugee camps and other civilian infrastructure, declares sovereignty over and expands its illegal settlements across the occupied West Bank, and terrorises Palestinians in their homes and communities. It was registered that there was the death of one of the people who were part of the Oscar-winning film
No Other Land.
He was killed by a settler who, no, it was seemed to be more convoluted than that. There's a fellow that has been identified as the murderer. They had a bulldozer coming into people's settlement. They were people telling, move away, stop it, you know, stop knocking down our stuff. People were being pushed down by the blades of the bulldozer. And then this man, who seems to be a person who is a hired hand, comes and starts shooting randomly to all the people around, shooting at them. Right?
Yeah, there's photos of him being, I mean, for how much.
I think he might be a hired hand.
Yeah, well, there's photos of him being held by the police with no remorse, smiling, so...
Yeah, that's his job. That's what he does.
To take you back to your point there, Annie, about essentially kind of the word games that these governments engage in, I think it's really interesting thinking about the kind of recent spat of recognitions as an attempt to symbolically recognise what's going on in Palestine without having to materially act on what's happening in Palestine. And I think it's worth pointing out that these governments still don't invoke the word genocide to describe what's going on in Palestine. I think it's very obvious that a big part of governments being able to prioritise their own domestic interests is obfuscating what is a pretty apparent and clear truth in terms of what's going on in the ground, and continuing to create this media cycle that regurgitates questions around, well, is this really a genocide? Is there actually anything bad going on in Gaza? Or really, is it all Hamas's fault? Like, there is this constant cycle of repeating these questions, even though on the ground, the answer is obvious. And I think, Toby, before we started, you were talking about Sky News's kind of
just thinking about the point you were saying.
No, tell us about what you wanted to say about that.
Well, the circus. Well, because you had David Spears, a former, like, Fairfax or Fox Media, whatever, like, Rupert Murdoch, media company associated person that's now with the ABC, has got a massive picture of the boy with his ribs exposed and spine exposed in Palestine, showing it to Albanese, and Albanese's equivocating on how bad it is and whatever. And then,
because that's the Zionist approach at the moment, to pretend that it's not really happening.
Well, I mean, it's just like, yeah.
I don't even think it's to pretend it's not really happening. It's to cause confusion and dissent around.
Oh, great.
Creating a kind of coherent narrative.
So we're having this chattering. The chattering. It's
and
that people are dying.
The Sky News counter to that was to roll out one of these living corpses that are its editors somewhere up the ranks, saying that, saying that, like, yo, actually the boy's got cerebral palsy, and actually this editor that's been behind the desk of a Herald Sun cubicle for 50 years knows everything about cerebral palsy and how it presents via just a picture. And so,
well, it just, what you're saying is that how low can they go?
Yeah.
Can their belly go any lower on the ground? And it's fascinating because a long running parallel to the people dying are these ongoing, it's just exposing a whole range of legacy media and corporate outfits as being, and governments as being, really just completely against the interests of the majority of people and the earth, effectively.
And being compliant and complicit to the interests of governments who are actively violating human rights.
Yeah, that's right. And that isn't in our interests. I mean, quite clearly not in our interests. Now, during the near total blockade on humanitarian aid in the Gaza Strip, Israel has repeatedly claimed that Hamas steals aid and that restricting it will help the two parties achieve a ceasefire. It's been proven that this is not true. However, despite this, important news arms in the United States, the New York Times, has continually repeated the claim, despite the fact that it's been proven not to be true. So what they're doing is exposing themselves to being untrustworthy and sidelining them as being credible news organisations. So from now on, you can't say, I got this from the New York Times, and feel that there is any competency behind that information.
There's a brilliant website called the New York Crimes that fact checks the New York Times that you can look up. It's actually quite brilliant what they've done.
Well, I think that might be a good segue into actually establishing some of the facts on the ground. So Gaza's health ministry said on Thursday that the IDF has killed 111 Palestinians and wounded 820 over the previous 24 hours. A majority were reportedly killed while trying to reach aid. And additionally, some stats, now that we've kind of seen this all-out attack on Palestinians trying to seek aid over the last couple of months. The stats are in: at least 1,330 aid seekers have been killed and 8,818 have been injured. So I think really cuts through, I think, some of that chatter around whether or not this is something worth intervening in. If that many people are dying in the space of a month, you don't need to have arguments about whether, you know, that man has cerebral palsy and really starved to death or not. Like, it's irrelevant. It's completely irrelevant to intervening in a completely kind of disgusting display of human cruelty, I think is how I would describe it.
Yeah, and I mean, look, not to end on a sour note, we have today, there's so many actions that you can take part of. There's a Save the Public Housing rally at midday
or 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock at the State Library. But then following that, I think in what ties all this stuff together, you can there's a protest at the ALP conference at Moolley Valley Racecourse.
At 3.30. At
3.30 p.m., which ties together all the issues. CFMEU, public housing, genocide, right to protest. And speaking to the public housing rally, we have Hank on the line. Hank, can you hear
Hello.
Us?
Hello.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Tell us about why it's important for... In fact, Hank, I was thinking to myself about the public housing towers and the Victorian government. I was wondering why nobody has used a cartoon image of the Victorian government and its developer mates as the big bad wolf and all of us as the three little pigs.
Well, that's right. Well, they're already starting to... what did the big bath blow and...
Huff and puff and blow the houses down.
Yeah, they're already starting to do that, you know, in Flemington and Richmond and North Melbourne. So I think that's a very good image to have in mind.
And so the Save Public Housing Collective is gathering people together today to be loud and proud about why public housing is important.
Yeah, it's the Save Public Housing Collective, renters and housing union and other organisations putting this together. As you said, I heard you say at 11 o'clock, it's starting at the... Victorian State Library and going to march on down past Homes Victoria, have some speeches there as well and end up at the at Parliament.
Why is it... sorry to interrupt you, Hank. Why is it important for people to kind of come out and show up for public housing residents and public housing as a kind of public institution?
Well, it's supporting the directly supporting the public housing residents like myself who are in the buildings that are going to get knocked down, which is like 10,000 people, 6,660 homes. I think that in general, this is a rapacious expansion of privatisation, which is going to change the face of the city that we live in. So that's how it affects everyone. It's a transfer. It's a theft of public wealth. Mm-hmm. Which is going to worsen the housing crisis and increase the power of landlords and the property speculators to have complete control over everything and increase homelessness, etc.
Well, you well pointed, because people who are living in comfortable situations, they should realise that the government is giving public land to private developers. Public land. No more owned by the public. Why would you do that? Why would you give all these assets over to the biggest bully in town?
Well, I mean, it's the property, the property speculators have clearly got a direct line of control through the government, and that's the only thing that makes sense in this. I mean, it's very reminiscent of when the Kennett government was knocking down public schools and selling off that land as well. It's the same thing.
And so now they have to rebuild public schools, or they've siphoned off money to private schools, pretending that they are actually doing the job, but they're not. This is a line in the sand, isn't it, for not only the public housing tenants, but for actually a Victorian society.
Yes, I think it, like I said, I think it will change the face of the city. I mean, the face of the city has been changed significantly. So much over the last couple of decades. I mean, all you've got to do is look around at all the... I can see through my window, like, there's cranes everywhere, you know, because I'm on the 12th floor, so I've got a good view of it. And it's like it's going to be more and more of this and these shoddy buildings, and they're going to put people who are in secure public housing and put them into these privatised places, which they euphemistically call community housing, Which of these rotten new buildings that are like, you know, I've heard some people call them tofu boxes, or a woman the other day say that they're like, you know, it's like a prison cell. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was talking to some people who were down at the picket on the last Monday. They were saying that they are in the private rental market, and what people are being having to pay for is exorbitant and low standard, and that the places, the homes in the towers are looking really good at the moment.
That's right. And, you know, if you just talk to anybody who's like having to live in a share house because they can't, you know, I mean, people are forced into circumstances that they don't want to be in. And so it's not just a question of us public housing residents. It's going to make the power of the landlords much stronger.
Now, I have to say that the Walker Estate is a case in point, Northcote. They knocked them all down, and there's multi-million dollar apartments on that place now. So actually, it's not share. It's not making the housing crisis go away. It's really about the big end of town making its fat bum comfortable.
Yeah, and in those Walker flats, I mean, yeah, it used to be all public housing residents. And now it's like, as you said, it's got like these expensive flats, and the few community housing flats that are in there, they're not facing the creek. They're not in a nice place, you know. It's clearly for the gentrification of the area.
Well, Hank, I hope you don't mind me asking, but you're currently a resident in public housing, and I thought it would be I'd like to know a bit more about what it's like being on the receiving end of this kind of housing instability.
Well, I mean, the first thing is, which has been said many times, but it's worth repeating, is that there was no consultation. And the people in my block of flats are all kind of like not sure what's going to happen. There's no timeline for us. You know, so we're looking down a future that we just don't know what's going to happen. And where are we going to get moved to? I mean, Dandenong, or away from our communities and away from the services that we need. And
it's a shame job, Hank. It's a shame job. Tell us again about the rally and we'll wrap up.
Yep. So the rally's at 11 o'clock, starting at the Victorian State Library, and it will go for a couple of hours, marching past Homes Victoria to the Parliament, and there'll be speakers from residents, there'll be speakers from organisations who are fighting for saving public housing, as well as some political supporters of it at the Parliament.
Thanks for talking to us.
We'll see you there.
Thank you. See you there.
The Victorian State Government is planning repressive new laws to restrict protest, including bans on protective masks and lock-on devices, increased police search powers, restrictions on symbols of resistance such as flags, and creation of so-called safe zones around religious buildings, putting significant areas of the CBD off limits. We must say no to this attack on democracy. Protest is a fundamental human right. Join the fight to defend it at a mass rally hosted by Defend Dissent Coalition on Tuesday, 12th of August, 5:30 p.m. at Parliament House. Defend Dissent Coalition is a 3CR supporter.
One of the most inspiring things I've heard in the last week was from one of my older comrades, who was protesting against the Vietnam War when she was a teenager. And she made the point that there was a generation of people who came before the Vietnam War, and then there was a generation after. In other words, there was a Vietnam generation, people that lived through that war, people that protested against that war, and that for those people, for millions of them around the world to rose up against this system, they were never the same again. They were changed forever. They were people who knew how the world worked from that point onwards. Never again could they be lied to by those in power. and that they knew that a mass movement could change the world. Well, what we're seeing now, doesn't matter how old you are, doesn't matter if you're Gen X or whatever, we are all now Generation Gaza. We and hundreds of millions of people around the world who have stood up against this genocide, we know we will never be the same again. And that is a great fear for those in power. And that is our determination to carry on, because we've seen so much in these last 2 years. Any, you know, the veil that covers this system in an illusion of the rule of law and democracy and all of that, that has been ripped away, and we've seen the reality of a system of brutality, of genocide, of impunity, of profit-making in the face of death and destruction. We've seen our leaders, not just from the far right, but from the Democrats in America to the Labour Party in Australia. We've seen which side they've lined up on, and we've seen that they're much more concerned with trying to silence a movement against the genocide than they are with trying to stop the genocide itself. We've seen the role of the media in this, absolutely despicable. Because the point we've made all along is, of course, that Israel can only get away with what it does because it continues to be backed and armed and funded and given impunity by powerful nations all around the world. And the only reason that our governments in the West have been able to get away with that is because of a compliant media that has reported Israeli propaganda after Israeli propaganda for years. And still, even in this moment, when they're forced to broadcast some of the images of starvation coming out of Gaza, what do we hear on ABC Radio this morning, all morning on the way in? It was, oh, Israel's acting to make sure more aid gets into Gaza. Don't worry, they're airlifting supplies in here. The benevolent Israeli occupation. Don't worry, they're sending flour. Sugar in there, go home, don't worry about it, it's all over, we got this under control. More lies, total lies. They won't even report what the aid agencies are saying, that this is a grotesque distraction, in their words. A grotesque distraction is exactly what Israel is trying to do, and they only have one purpose in mind, which is to demobilize this mass movement, this moment of uprising around the world. They want us to go home and shut up so they can get on with the genocide. But we're not going to. We are Generation Gaza. And we're going to fight until Palestine is free from the river to the sea. And it's amazing to see a massive turnout today. What I want to announce from our point of view, from the Palestine Action Group Sydney, is that now is the moment more than ever when we need to rise up and stand up. So what we're announcing today is that next Sunday, we are declaring our intention to march across the Harbour Bridge. Yeah! We want to see tens of thousands, 50,000, 100,000 people march for humanity across that Harbour Bridge. Yeah! And we call on the authorities, we demand and implore the authorities to not get in the way, to stand with us against a genocide. We know Chris Binns has been on the wrong side of this for 2 years. We call on him to get out of the way. We know there have been a series of historic mass marches over the Harbour Bridge in decades past, a massive march for reconciliation in 2000, an important, very supportable march for LGBT rights and pride march just 2 years ago, which Albanese himself participated in. So don't let them say it can't be done. Don't let them say that when humanity calls, we cannot take such an important symbolic act as marching over the most iconic like never before, that Israel must be stopped and that we intend to stop them. In our thousands and in our millions, we are all Palestinians, and we're going to march over the Harbour Bridge next Sunday. And if Albanese means a single word of his mealy-mouthed, weasel-word statements lately, then he should be supporting that, and he should be marching with us as well. All right, obviously that's going to mean a big battle this week, potentially in the courts, in the media, all the rest of it, but that is our intention, and we are going to need to see hundreds of thousands of people spreading the word, and tens of thousands at least there, ready to go next Sunday when we do that. So please, be part of that mass effort next week. We'll have to announce everything. Okay. With that, I'm going to invite up our final speaker, who is, of course, Hannah Thomas, former Greens candidate, brutally attacked by New South Wales police. I'm sure she'll tell the story, but we know that the cops punched her in the eye. She may lose sight in one of her eyes, and then they lied about it. Lie after lie after lie. And lies in defense of the indefensible, police brutality, using Chris Minns's, you know, anti-protest hysteria, and this is the result that we warned about from day one. And so we call on Chris Minns to repeal these anti-protest laws, and we demand justice for Hannah. Anyway, let's hear from Hannah.
Thank you so much, everyone. We're gathering today on land that is and always will be Gadigal land. Land that was never ceded, that was violently stolen through invasion, occupation, dispossession, and genocide. Solidarity with First Nations people here in Palestine and everywhere. I want to start by repeating the call to action. A couple of hours ago, Israel illegally abducted the Handala, and on board are two Australians. Tanya Saki, who is a constituent of our Prime Minister, and Robert Martin. Please, when you go home, do all you can to ensure their safety. Call and email the Prime Minister, Penny Wong, and DFAT to demand their release. Solidarity with them and the rest of their crew. I'm so sorry that our governments have failed so comprehensively that ordinary people like you have had to do this. For almost 2 years, Israel has killed a classroom worth of children every single day. Every day we've seen Israel shatter the limits of human evil, all while playing the victim. We've seen fathers pick up pieces of their children in plastic bags, people in refugee camps burned alive, children undergoing amputations without pain relief, mothers shot dead while begging for food, and now emaciated skeletal babies in the last moments of their lives as Israel deliberately starves almost 2 million people to death in full view of the world. It's hard to find the words because the limits of human language have been reached. There are no words to describe what the people of Gaza have gone through at the hands of Israel. And like all of you, I'm filled with anger, and at the moment, much of it is squarely aimed at Labour, the Albanese and Minns government in particular. Because it is only because of complicit Western governments like our own that Israel has been allowed to get away with 659 days of pure evil. And last week, our government's values were on full display when instead of sanctioning Israel for blocking aid and hunting children for sport, our government sanctioned Senator Marine Varouki for simply holding a sign. What a proud moment for the Albanese government, up there with achieving the worst homelessness in living memory, with approving the largest climate project in the Southern Hemisphere, with signing off on the destruction of ancient indigenous Rockard of beating the Morrison government's record on secrecy and quietly shoveling another $800 million to the US military to an active participant in Israel's genocide. This is the Albanese government summed up. This is the modern day Labour Party, more offended by a cardboard sign than an emaciated toddler's corpse. More concerned with preserving decorum than stopping genocide. Honestly, how sick in the head, how morally bankrupt, how absolutely soulless do you have to be more angry about a cardboard sign than a live-streamed infanticide? To the Albanese government, I say Senator Marine Faruqi has more courage and decency in her little finger than your entire government has. Than all 94 of your members combined, all of you sitting in Parliament, silent, unbothered, and absolutely fucking useless in the face of the greatest crime of the century. Raise eyebrows, and you know it. These statements are too little, and they're an attempt to rewrite history, and they will comprehensively fail. As someone who, like Penny, came to this country from Malaysia, one of the only countries on the right side of history when it comes to this genocide, I want to put on the record how deeply ashamed myself and so many Malaysians are to have you, a sycophantic shill for Western Empire, as the face of this publicity.
Porque son nada, ven maná, porque son nada. People are where they are. You're going to have to meet them where they are. And you're going to have to be generous. And that's why it comes back to the idea of friendship. Friendship is never with people who are just like you. What a boring world it would be if you only made friends with people identical to yourself. You know, then again, you might as well have imaginary friends. You want to learn from people. You want to laugh with them. You want to laugh at their limitations. They laugh at your limitations. You grow together. Yeah? So politics is also like that. If you're just stagnant, you know, if somebody enters politics age 15 and when they are 35, the same person. Terrible. They haven't grown. They haven't shaped themselves. I'm Vijay Prashad with 3CR. You better listen to it because it's really good.
You're back with Tobiah, Annie and Anila on Solidarity Breakfast. And we've got Chelsea Wilson on the line. G'day, Chelsea. How are you?
Good morning.
Yes.
Good to be here.
Yes.
How are you?
Good, good, good. And we're going to talk to you about the Count's winter season. And the Count, of course, is the best jazz club on the eastern side of town.
Yeah, I like to think of it as the jazz oasis of the southeast.
It probably is, actually, because it's situated in Monash University. And it is such a very friendly and cozy sort of a place to be in amongst all those buildings.
All the concrete.
Yeah, it's nice. I've had a lot of people say that it has a bit of a New York jazz club feel to it. It's a little unexpected being on a university campus, but I think that's brilliant that, you know, the university has been so supportive of having live music in the area. And it means that we can, you know, take some risks. We're not all just about, you know, trying to make these huge profits. We really are about the music and about providing a space for community to come and enjoy live music.
Well, over the August and September, you've got a pretty interesting collection of performers, and it kicks off on Wednesday. It's Wednesdays, Wednesday nights. People should be putting
Wednesday
it in.
Night.
Yeah, yeah.
Hump day.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a perfect time to go to such a cruisy place. And I was looking at the program and a wild lot of variations on the theme of jazz.
Yeah, well, I guess for me the word jazz is a bit of a broad church. You know, what is jazz? I mean, it's one of jazz musicians' favourite subjects, actually. But for me, I'm like, it's a lifestyle, it's a verb, it's a, it's a cult. But, you know, it's a very broad genre term, and I like to play with that quite a bit. And we're very lucky in Australia. We have so many artists that are making incredible music and, you know, that kind of plays with the concept of jazz. But, yeah, next week we've got this wonderful artist, David Dower, who's a piano player, coming in to launch a new album of his called Sonda. And he's really interesting. He's a piano player, but he's fallen in love with Bulgarian music, which is so unexpected. But he's been to Bulgaria, I think, 7 times or something with his trio, and he's written this album that has vocals sung in Bulgarian. So it's like jazz mixed with Bulgarian, but it's very fun and it's kind of prog rocky at times. Very, very cool.
Yeah, yeah, very, very interesting. I was looking at that, and a while ago there was a real thing for Bulgarian choirs.
Right. It's fascinating. I mean, when I first heard this project, I was like, what is this? But he's absolutely electrifying on stage. So that'll be a fun one.
In terms of the kind of general lineups, do you tend to have kind of local performers, or are you kind of pulling in international big names?
Oh, I'm really about supporting locals in jazz club, to be honest. But also at the moment, like, it would be extremely expensive to fly people here for, you know, a jazz club gig. Mm-hmm. But we've just got so much fantastic homegrown talent.
Well, that's true, because I was looking at all the different ones, because after that you've got Nadira and Friends, which is the music of Nat King Cole. And then it follows up with Steve Sedgegreen Green's trio. So these are all people that are very well known amongst the jazz scene. But the thing about your club is that everything's up close and personal.
Yeah, get a lot of regulars that come to the club, and you know, when people come for the first time as well, I get a lot of comments about people feel that it's very intimate with the performer because you get to sit, you know, quite close to the stage. It's got a really beautiful sound system and a great piano. So, you know, it's very, like, you know, it's pretty state-of-the-art in terms of the sound production, but yet you're really close to the artist, which is brilliant.
Well, I, like many people, I assume, am a bit intimidated by listening to jazz. Do you have any tips for how to listen to jazz if you come along to a show?
What a great question. I think the main thing with jazz is that's kind of, I guess, different from popular music is just around the structure. So in jazz, there's a thing called the head of a song, and that's kind of the main melody. So what usually happens is that the whole band will play that main head of the song, the main melody. So if you think of a song like Caravan, it'll be nine and stars above the shine so bright, and you'll hear that main part. But then every single person in the band after that is going to have a solo.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So everybody loves it.
Rather than, you know, in rock music, you might have that one guitar solo moment and there's verse, chorus, guitar solo, chorus. In jazz, you hear that head of the song, that main melody bit, but then everybody in the band gets to have a, you know, a bit of a go on improvising and doing something else. And if you don't do something different with the song in jazz, it's not considered very hip.
You're a boring person.
How much of it is actually improv? Like, how are these people getting on stage and just making it up as they go along? Like, what's the secret?
Well, I guess they're not really totally making it up as they go along. I guess we've got, like, you know, you might call it bebop language, or, you know, there's certain kind of rules that you have to, you know, play with. But it's about how much you can sort of push the boundaries within the framework of the song, you know, and it's very playful. And you can, when you watch it, this is what makes it so exciting. When you watch the band, you can see that how they're communicating with each other, because they might not have decided who's actually taking the solo on what song, and they're looking at each other and it's like, are you going to go next? Are you going to go next? Or we'll throw it to the trumpet player. We'll throw it to the saxophone player.
It's an alive affair. And I was going to say that Daryl McKenzie Jazz Orchestra, isn't there 18 people? Or is it a smaller outfit?
Yes, the big band with Daryl McKenzie. I mean, that's an iconic big band. I mean, big band's a little different because it's way more structured. It kind of has to be when you have that many people on stage. I love big band music, and it's, you know, for me, I'll always program big bands. It's such a huge just achievement to get that many people in the room, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
It's incredible, and it just sounds so good when you're sitting there and you're just hearing this wall of sound from a big band. You know, nothing compares to that, you know. And that show, Femme Belling's going to come and sing, so that will be brilliant.
Well, also, there's the opposite, really, is Andrea Keller Trio, which is really cool, but very smart kind of music, isn't it? It's very cerebral.
Yeah, I mean, Andrea Keller, you know, is an ARIA award-winning pianist and composer and academic, and you know, she's got the most beautiful touch on the piano. You know, she's a real sensitive soul and a very poetic how she plays. And she's a real important stalwart of the Australian jazz scene and is a beautiful composer. And she's got a new trio that she's bringing to the Counts for that show. And, you know, I don't know exactly what it's going to be. And sometimes it's like that. I go, come and play. You do you.
Yeah, you do your stuff.
See what happens, you know. But I think she's going to premiere some new compositions at that show with her new trio. So I'm very excited about that one.
I'm going to ask you a hard-hitting question now.
Sure.
Chelsea. Why jazz? Why should I come along and watch a jazz show instead of going down to my local pub and watching some punk music or rock music or going along to a candlelight concert? Why jazz?
Well, I think you should do all of those things because I think it makes a really interesting life. And that's one of the things about 3CR, right? Like just listening to that, moment just before about talking about having different friends, you know, and not just having friends just like yourself. You know, I think it's the same with music. Life's too short, you know, and it's different. You know, you don't eat the same meal every night, mm-hmm. you know. Variety, you know, it's such a cliche to say spice of life, but I think it's true. I mean, I'm actually in Adelaide at the moment. I just came over for IndieCon and the Air Awards the other night, and the other night I was at a punk gig. You know, last night I went into a venue where there was a cover band. That's all good, but I'm always going to come back to jazz because mm-hmm. to me there's something so special about the way the musicians interact, the freedom on stage. You know, Duke Ellington used to say that jazz freedom of expression, and I think it's one of those genres where, unlike other genres, the instrumentalists and the musicians get to be very free in a way that they aren't in other genres, and to witness that in a live context, you know, nothing compares to that.
I'm
and that's
sold.
Why you should come.
Yeah, so they can get tickets online, can't they?
Yeah, you can buy tickets at the door, you can book online, and it's not expensive, you know, that's
Well, actually, it's not expensive.
I love about the club. It's,
yeah.
You know, it's like $25, $29. And, you know, we have a restaurant, you know, and you can come, you can eat a pizza. It feels fancy, but it's chill.
Yeah, it is. It is chill.
I like that.
Yeah. Live music, I mean, if you've got nothing, maybe $25 is a lot of money. But in actual fact, that is a good deal. Thank you very much for talking to us this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. You do such an amazing job. Big props to 3CR.
Thank you so much. Have a lovely rest of your day.
Thanks, mate. Bye. Right.
That was Chelsea Wilson, senior producer of The Counts. And before that, we heard Josh Lees and Hannah Thomas from the Sydney Palestine Rally, recorded by Vivian Langford, who does the Climate Action Show on Monday at 5 p.m. We've got a couple of selections that Annie's picked from.
Oh, no, you just pick one because we've only got a certain amount of time before we can get to Kevin. So go on. Potluck.
Listening to Radical Radio 3CR.
A week's on with Arity Brekkie Team listener when, for once, we have to acknowledge the Lord Rupert of Wapping's sin encapsulated the issue in one headline. PM, that speaks Supremo Anthony Albanese, PM, quote, won't rush to recognise Palestine. Well, after 77 years, what's a few more years between friends like Zion and the US of the UN of the US of the world? A few more years of occupation, slaughter, destruction, genocide, starvation. Yes. Well, what's your party policy, Anthony? Well, clearly to recognise a Palestinian state. Then why was Fatima Payman expelled? She voted for a Palestinian state for party policy. For not-to-be-rushed party policy. But Anthony did the unthinkable after Zion Supremo Benjamin Not Another Yahoo and his true blue Aussie henchmen, interesting all Benjamin's puppeteers and henchmen are men, claimed no one is starving in Gaza, in the non-land, non-peoples, non-land, his true blue Aussie henchmen explaining the images that have finally stirred some action from the collaborators, not a lot, but some, are fake news spread by evil terrorist Hamas, finding time to flood the world with fake photographic news between stealing the non-land, non-people's food. Benjamin's denial was beyond comprehension. Anthony summoned his bottomless courage. What courage? What a spine. What a backbone. Just when we thought his silence for the past 21 months was beyond comprehension, along with the minister for going overseas all the time and being a perfectly good little prefect penny in the team. As, like true blue Aussie long-term supporters of the slaughter, destruction and genocide, France, Canada and His Most Gracious Majesty's home country find mass starvation going a bit far, the latter two threaten to recognise a non-land, non-people Palestine state unless Zion doesn't slaughter, destruct and genocide quite as much, but also demanding Hamas not exist and the state, wherever it may be totally demilitarized, with the usual suspect world colonists determining the composition of its government, thus avoiding the non-land, non-people getting it wrong yet again, having shown they can't be trusted with democracy when they elect the wrong people. They also failed to inform us just where this state would be, while, like true blue Aussie, affirming their commitment to a two-state solution, failing to tell us how they would solve two little problems. Zion declaring there will never be a non-land, non-people Palestinian state, and to render it impossible, the possible sites for that non-state are either occupied by Zion train killers, backed up by billions in train killer merchandise, or by Zion illegal settlers, deemed legal by Zion and the US of, with carte blanche to slaughter and destroy and genocide, just like the train killers. Oh, and the non-land, non-people must respect Zion's right to colonize their original land. 77 years of occupation, a fait accompli. Now, listener, you must be in a state of shock, aware that the above is blatantly anti-Semitic. Under the most reasonable and liberal definition of anti-Semitism adopted after deep academic research by Anthony Albanese's envoy, especially given the above is sympathetic to the non-land, non-people who just happen to be Semitic. Now, the arts community, including the evil union, is suggesting in a most anti-Semitic way the definition could be a barrier to free artistic expression. Absolute rubbish, of course, because, as defined, they are free to do what they like as long as they don't criticise the slaughter, destruction, genocide and starvation, or imply the non-land, non-people deserve their own land, or worse, are actually people, human. So we've got no idea what they're worried about. On such matters, US of Big Supremo Donald Trump or the poor announced he has stopped six wars, the greatest stopped six wars ever, and brickbats to the media which suggested maybe he could have named just which wars he had stopped, when we know two of them off the top of our heads, the non-land, non-people, slaughter, destruction, genocide and starvation, and his close mate, brackets temporary, Vlad the Putin impaling of Ukraine, solved as he boasted justifiably by the Don on day one. And let's face it, Donald must have stopped lots of wars before they even began. If he said he stopped six wars, he stopped six wars. He certainly hasn't stopped tariff wars. Announcing Canada's sellout or threat to sell out his very, very, very close friend Zion makes it difficult to do a deal, which I thought he'd already done. while evil commie lefty wooden work in an iron Brazil has been hit with a 50% tariff for daring charge Donald's very, very, very close friend, Bolsonaro, I was robbed, for attempting to overthrow an election which was clearly rigged, because if it hadn't been rigged, he would have won. Something that Don knows all about. An appropriate time to remind listeners to tune in every 2 minutes to Tariff Update, our new exciting segment on every 3CR program, keeping us as up to date as possible on the ups and downs of Donald's rationality. The way to stop wars, of course, is to hand trillions to the merchants of death. Also handy if you can't stop the war you handed the trillions to stop. Something of which our Minister for Being Offensive and Trained Killing Richard Malls the Bad Guys, he of the giant mind, knows but too well. So too well he handed yet another 800 mil to the US of merchants of last week as yet another instalment on that onomatopoeic symbol of offence, Forcus. Richard, isn't one of Donald's offensive people conducting a review of Forcus? Yes, that's right. And hasn't the offensive person expressed reservations about Forcus? I wouldn't call them reservations. What would you call them? Slight reservations. And if he recommends that Forcus be scrapped, I presume we can get our 800 mil back plus the earlier millions, the earlier instalments. No, of course not. That money is now the property of the US. That would be theft. So we hand billions to their merchants of death and get nothing? I wouldn't say nothing. I'm sure the USO would appreciate our generosity. Then, Richard, wouldn't it have been smarter not to hand over the latest 800 mil until the review was completed? Sorry, I don't follow. Armed with the lessons of that watertight contract, Richard signed another last week when his most gracious Majesty's home country counterpart visited to talk a bit of train killing. This time for nuclear subs, with Richard and True Blue Aussie striking a hard bargain. Like, if there are defects or faults with the subs, they flog us. We have no right to sue or seek compensation for the billions we've handed over. And Britain can veto any True Blue Aussie suggestions for design details that might benefit True Blue Aussie. Oh, and they can tear it up whenever they want to, presumably after we've handed over the billions. Richard, when we sign these contracts, do you notice little reactions, little hints like they rub their hands together in glee and can't control their laughter? Sorry, I don't follow again. Not wasting millions, that attempt to put a True Blue Aussie rocket into orbit. It took off, looked good for 14 seconds, then blew to smithereens. And the bloke behind the project, Adam Gilmore, real name, said he was happy. What would he consider a failure? What would make him unhappy? In an understatement, he did proffer, "Of course, I would have liked more flight time." Right. Yeah, 14 seconds isn't exactly out of space. Notice super funds Hester and Host Plus are investors. Workers' money blown to smithereens. Fortunately, many of them may not have lost all that much, as a super industry analysis of tax figures showed one in four Victorian workers were being dudded by their caring employer. Sorry, not dudded, inadvertently underpaid. About 850,000 workers. Nationally, workers owed 5.7 billion real figure in unpaid super. That's a hell of a lot of inadvertent. Any wonder caring employers will argue at the socialist productivity talk fest for the caring business class relations system to be simplified, including removing crippling economic impediments like wages and conditions. The Norway Wealth Fund, which ironically attracts much of its wealth from fossils but argues for combating climate change, if there is such a thing, has accused the world's banks of misleading investors about their role in the fossil industry, providing more than 7 trillion real figure to fossils since the 2015 Paris Agreement to reduce pollution just in case there is climate change, showing what a momentous commitment the great banks are making to the transition from fossils. just like Dutch fossil behemoth, shall be right, excited by gas, gas, gas and oil, oil, oil possibilities in the Taru Trop, a 50,000 square kilometre area of Queensland. The caring business class, hayseed and sheepshed state natural resources minister, equally excited. The government is well aware of the prize on offer. It has an incredible potential, not just for gas, but also for oil. He was ecstatic. While Saul Cavendish, real name and industry analyst, told us excitedly it will revitalise True Blue Aussie's oil production and fuel security. Shelby Wright, the minister, the analyst, all displaying their dedicated commitment to the transition. Oh, and the banks, of course. Equally excited must be the residents of the small western True Blue Aussie city coastal town of Lancelin, where erosion has taken more than 25 metres of land in the past year, 10 metres of the shoreline since May, and locals pleading for help from WA government to prevent their town being washed away altogether. 900 people signing a petition seeking assistance, which they'll get, of course, because the Western True Blue Aussie government has already showed its commitment to the transition by having Anthony Albanese jettison legislation to establish a federal environment protection authority and to support the great fossils like Woodside with profits, Santos us the profits, and shove pollutants wrong in their long, long, long transition campaign as long as Mother Earth survives that long. Well, life on survives that long. The state socialists are meeting this weekend with motions to scrap AUKUS and to condemn the slaughter, destruction, genocide and starvation, recognise a non-land, non-people Palestinian state, and finally, to frank the value of the so-called socialist left having the numbers, its spokespeople have already inferred they will heed the pressure of Anthony and Penny and Richard and ensure the government is not embarrassed by reckless calls to do the right thing. The motions, they say, will be watered down, also known as going to water. Good morning.
The Black Lives Matter movement is not going away here or overseas. It gives me hope seeing the numbers of people that turn out to these Invasion Day demonstrations in Melbourne. It gives me the understanding that we will win, folks. We will succeed.
You're listening to Radical Radio on 3CR, 855 on your AM dial, 3CR Digital, and podcasting and streaming on 3cr.org.au.
You're back on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie, Tobiah and Anila, and we've got on the line...
Anna and Ace from Justice Not Jails. How are you guys going?
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. Yeah, so we've been speaking a bit in the headline section about some of the crazy reforms that
That word has been misused.
Yeah, I know. Some of the CLP... egregious acts that they've done about the spit hoods being reintroduced, about telling medical physician associations that they should just go look after sick kids. It's been really a whole year of abuse by this country Liberal Party.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, we're sitting in beautiful Larrakia country up here in Garamilla, and it's really nice to connect down to NAM folks because since the CLP government was elected back in November last year, there's been a sustained attack on sustained Aboriginal attack happening. Then the latest measures this week, which was pushing through Youth Justice Reform Act, I'm distracted. There's some beautiful red-winged parrots flying by. Lovely morning. It's just the latest. So we're keen to connect and talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I think you'd find not a lot of people down here are aware of the changes that have been happening since the Leah Finocchiaro's government was elected last year. Do you mind just updating some of our listeners about what some of those changes are, from bus laws being changed and bus drivers being given guns to unsanitary laws and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's I'm unhappily to list the sustained attacks for you down there. One of the first bits of legislation change that the CLP changed was to decrease the age of criminal responsibility down to 10 years old. The former Labor Party only increased it to 12, you know, a year before that. So that was one of the first pieces of legislation change. There's been attacks to the Aboriginal Child Protection Act, which is something that came out of the Stolen Generation Royal Commission, attacks that way. There's been continued bail reform, so bail and accessing that has filled the jails more and more quickly. More recently, we've had around the buses and the pepper spray, what can be described as... none of this has been implemented yet, but I think we need to understand the violence inherent in the proposition. So initially there was discussion, and it's being proposed that anyone in the NT could apply to access pepper spray, so we'd have an increase of weapons in the community that way. From there, the discussion went to buses and discussion that PSO... that's sort of Melbourne language, but PSOs that are on the buses, but that are also similarly security element at public housing would be having access to guns. And so that's been discussed. Wow. At that same time, we started seeing posters in the buses that really overtly racist, in the sense of you couldn't have a lot of bags if you came onto the buses. You couldn't have lots of baggage. Smells and stains, real targeted attacks on people in our community that access the buses. And so now we are at the point of this week that the Youth Justice Act has been changed, and the main changes in that legislation, and Anna can talk more, I'm sure, but is the reintroduction of spit hoods, normalisation of spit hoods, and the removal of detention as a last resort for when we're talking about youth justice. And that's, that's one of those international laws things, which is
How big is the private prison business in the Northern Territory? Are they private prisons, or is this... Why do they hate the population so much?
They're a race... racism is profitable, but I think this is we could discuss the fascistic tendencies of the country Liberal Party to some extent, but this is a sustained attack on Aboriginal people.
And I think this week particularly with the youth justice, with the changes to the Youth Justice Act, or the reforms so-called, we've had fantastic politicians get up and speak against this, from the Greens, Independents, with such reason and such passion and such care for every community member. And some of the things that our Chief Minister, Leah Finocchiaro, has said have been, she's talking about protecting the community. This comes up time and time again about community safety, and what has been brought... what we have been highlighting, and particularly Amendment Natalie Hunter, the First Nations woman who is a leader in Justice Not Jails, has been saying is this is not, and Tabaline also, this is not about all community members. This is a completely racist policy, and it is targeting First Nations people, because it's not for everyone. Yeah, there's an disproportional amount of Aboriginal people in our justice system. We've got the second highest incarceration rate in the world of First Nations people. Mm-hmm. And so these laws do not come upon equally, which has been particularly disturbing. Taking out the jail or detention as a last resort, particularly, is appalling. especially when talking about children. And it defies, it goes against the UN Convention of the Rights of the Child. Several articles which say that this is a last resort, and they're just admitting that they're completely disregarding it, defying it.
What they're doing is undermining the entire Aboriginal community, basically.
Absolutely.
Well, and it's this real redefinition of what words are meant to mean, from reform to public transport to community protection, where really what Justice Not Jails Among and other orgs are doing is practicing real community protection and real community safety. And this government is seeking to redefine things just like public transport, not allowing the general public to access services that are owed to it. And I mean, the reason we reach out from down here is because you guys really sit at the front line for defense, or what this country calls defense spending. And you're saying Larrakia, I mean, there's still an ongoing campaign to save Lee Point that sort of wraps around all these other issues as well. And like, I was just sort of wondering,
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
He's got a long-winded way of asking you a question. He'd like to know what your opinion is.
In terms of Lee Point specifically, or how that...
No, just because it strikes us, I don't know about you, but it strikes me that practically every piece of legislation that's supposedly about the care of First Nations people or your country or the Northern Territory, it's all actually about mining or stealing land or stealing resources, pushing people around, and then dressing it up as being for the social benefit. It's just all lies, basically.
Well, we see the manipulation of the term safety up here, and it's actually across the nation, right? Because it's whose safety that matters. The LP says, oh, we're doing this because of community safety. Well, sorry, F me, because it's actually whose safety matters is that with private property, and those that have been, whose land has been stolen do not fucking matter. Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's all right.
We definitely see that. I don't understand the prisons here are not privatised yet, but we're seeing an increased usage of G4S and private companies sort of supporting the prison system, and definitely getting more and more private offices is something, because they're filling up the torture houses, aka the watch houses and the prisons. The government is looking to push through more and more security through that way. We can zoom out a bit. We're talking really specifically about the injustice system up here, but we can zoom out. We can see attacks on land rights and the community. Yes, definitely at Lee Point, and that campaign to hand back to Larrakia people is something definitely encourage people to look into, and that's because it's defence housing. This isn't any, housing up here is pretty expensive. The housing issue is a national issue, but this is not the proposal up at Lee Point. The land clearing of that important land is for defence housing.
They're giving them away to US personnel.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a military town up here. We need to understand that, the relationships between Pine Gap, military base up here, the war activities that this government gets up to. I guess I also want to mention here that, of course, the other things that are going on is that we've had the coroner report from the for Kumanjai Walker, and that which clearly says that the NT police is a racist institution. There's no other really way to interpret the comings out of that, and that was a long process, and that now have that document that speaks to it, which is... And I guess it's also to say that, want to acknowledge that a young person was murdered by a cop in Cole.
Yeah.
In Mbantua, and the Justice for White campaign has really articulated some demands, including the call for an independent investigation, that police should not be investigating police. And we've been thinking about, linking down to you guys and how that's a really, there's some other demands of the family which I'm happy to uplift, but that this is something that we can really call on a national level and support that campaign that way.
And you've sent down an audio from Ned and Natalie. Would now be an opportune moment to play it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, go for it.
I'm so stressed by, and I want to this government. They are very, very racist. We don't need them. We don't want them. If the attitude is that, then they need to go or leave us alone. I think it's not fair to do the things that they're doing right now. They were doing it way back, earlier years. And we have young generations who are growing up and want to live peaceful and to enjoy life in their own country. You occupies. This is not your land. This is our land. You just a foreigner. So, back off and leave us alone. Leave our kids and our country in peace. Thank you.
For me, Natalie from Justice Not Jails, I find that the amount of inflicted harm and torture that's been put upon our children, especially children in watch houses, halts, in the treatment of bad behaviours that they're creating on children that have all sorts of trauma, disabilities. They need help in health, not just locked away and treated like animals. I'm calling on the Commonwealth Government to step in and to sanction the NT government as a matter of urgency. It is very important. I would like to see special services around children directed, monies directed from the Commonwealth to ACOs, the Aboriginal Community Control Organisation, so they can support families on the ground through this process.
Just to wrap up, kind of thinking about what the alternative way of engaging with youth crime in the NT might look like. We know that this kind of carceral approach doesn't work, and it's also incredibly expensive. So the Northern Territory's government is spending $122,496 a year, which is $335 a day for each adult prisoner, and way more for every child who's imprisoned. For children, it's $1.4 million a year.
It down to the money, $3,852 a day, and they can't do any better than beat them up.
There must be better uses of that money. What are some of those alternatives?
Yeah, and look, this is what I was going to say next. It was wonderful hearing Ned Hargraves and also Natalie Hunter speaking then. This is not just coming from non-Indigenous folk. These are calls, just to highlight that point, these are calls from our First Nations people. These are laws that predominantly affect First Nations people. And so the listeners out there, so many people are speaking out against this unanimously. We've got organisations, we've got specialists, we've got leading community, people working with children who are saying, we've got elders saying that this cannot go on in this way. And I think, look, the fact that the CLP is cutting diversion programs is absolutely appalling, because we know that what was happening under Labor has not been working. So taking money away from education programs, working with young people to support them, investing, like the statistics you just said, investing the money,
The defunding, I mean, a really simple one is the de-investment of the last 15, 20 years in youth programming across the territory. Oh, that's probably really got in there. It's like a simple example of things. You know, I always think about that, what's that, Black Panther, not Black Panther film, what's the, oh gosh, I've forgotten. Anyway, is that?
The Wilder People, the one about the boy running away from.
Nah, what's like the big superhero, but it's like the.
Black Panther?
They're not Black Panther. Oh my God.
We're getting our superheroes mixed up.
And at the end, they're like, oh, let's build a community center. Like, I always think of it. Anyway, the lack of investment in youth programming is a really simple example of things that can do. Like, we, you know, like, there's heaps of evidence about how we wrap around families and young people when they're making, when their decision making
kindness works. Kindness works. Sticks don't.
There's some simple stuff around it, but yeah, like in terms of the economic question, what is to be done? And I guess like this is the thing. I don't think I think I really am conscious of some sort of idea of anti-exceptionalism. We really, there are distinct things about where we are lucky to live, and then that's reflected in our community and our government and who's. But I think that this stuff is like reflected nationally, and so where do we do? Like, it's not that the answers aren't there; it's just that there's a real dominance of a right wing narrative of how they assert what is community safety, and I think it's entrenched in colonial racism.
Yeah, and the root causes are just not being addressed. We're seeing for so long through both parties that addressing trauma, addressing intergenerational trauma, addressing poverty, addressing where people are living, access to services. This is constantly being this is a failure of both governments and particularly the CLP.
It's not a failure of the community, is it?
No.
You know what I mean. Like they're making out that intrinsically the people that are being targeted, there's something wrong with them. But in actual fact, that's just not true.
No, and I guess we really want to shout out that the Justice Not Jails formed because of the newly elected CLP government. Before that, we did have a Labor Party for two or three terms, and that was the time where we had the Royal Commission into the incarceration young people, and they were considered investigations in Dondale were as torture chambers, and that Justice Jail's legacy comes from really strong leadership, Aboriginal women doing work in the previous organisation called Shut Dondale. Mm. So we have that legacy stuff.
And it's continuing. We have to finish.
Beautiful. We'll link. we'll link to all your socials and stuff so people can stay in contact. And we'll go out with playing a song that you guys recommended by Jay Miller called "Unlock the System." Thanks very much for taking the time out of your mornings to talk to us and all the listeners. And we'll have you back for sure.
I appreciate it. Love Community Radio. Great
Thanks
to chat.
Thanks
so much.
Ciao. Never ever told us what they were doing, who he was doing, what's going on. Never.
We want justice for Walker!
We want justice for Walker!
It's a tragedy for us.
It's in the Northern Territory. After 4 days of protests, a decorated young officer has now been charged with murder.
Wanna know what is peace? Can someone educate us all? Because all that it seems is that no one even knows what it means. I mean, I could be wrong, but society is telling me that freedom isn't actually free. I hate to say, but it's hard being black in these streets. And when we tell them, they don't wanna believe. cause we're locked up in a system that we can't even see. Well, I guess my last song went right over your heads, cause I was sending out a message, but the message wasn't read. Reconciliation is what we all gotta spread, so what more needs to be said for this to get in your head? It's like, if you're white, you're right, but if you're black in this country, it's an everyday fight. But for real, I just wanna know why. It's like the system that we're in is going back in the time. I'm sick and tired of the pain going on in the streets. We're trying to make a change, but they won't let us speak. There's innocent black people who were murdered by police and no one's giving up. Well, that's the way it all seems, that there's a whole lot of things that were never discussed. The media never reveals what really happens to us. But when a wombat was killed, man, they made it a fuss. But let a cop shoot a brother, they never did lock him up. How would you feel if you had a stereotype? How would you feel if the police pulled you up at night? How would you feel being judged in your everyday life? How would you feel? Nah, stuff that. How would you feel if a cop ran straight through your house and shot your son in the head and left him dying by the couch? Dragged his body outside as he was crying out loud and left your family tortured as they all surround. And now I just wanna see a change. We protest in our country to stop all the pain, but negativity still comes our way. We need to unlock the system, cause right now it's not safe. But I really do take in hand, there's a lot of white mob on this land to do as much as they can to give back. And yes, I understand. That's why I love my white folks, cause they do give a damn. Now listen, we need to look out for each other, but even better, we spread love for one another. Cause there be some days on my mind I really wonder how we gonna make a change for the way they see our color. Cause some nights I can't sleep, I just wanna make it so us indigenous people can eat. So I preach like every day of the week, so hopefully sometime we can live.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.